Chapter 1, Part 1 of The Lost House. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Carolyn. The Lost House by Richard Harding Davis. Chapter 1, Part 1. It was a dull day at the Chancellery. His Excellency the American Ambassador was absent in Scotland, unveiling a bust to Bobby Burns, paid for by the numerous lovers of that poet in Pittsburgh. The First Secretary was absent at Aldershot, observing a sham battle. The military attaché was absent at the Crystal Palace, watching a football match. The naval attaché was absent at the Duke of Deptford's, shooting pheasants, and at the embassy, the second secretary, having lunched leisurely at the Arts, was now alone, but prepared with his life to protect American interests. Accordingly, on the condition that the story should not be traced back to him, he had just confided a state secret to his young friend, Austin Ford, the London correspondent of the New York Republic. "I will cable it," Ford reassured him, as coming from a Hungarian diplomat, temporarily residing in Bloomsbury, while en route to his post in Patagonia. In that shape, not even your astute chief will suspect its real source. And further from the truth than that I refuse to go. What I dropped in to ask, he continued, is whether the English are going to send over a polo team next summer to try to bring back the cup. I've several other items of interest, suggested the secretary. The weekend parties to which you have been invited, Ford objected, can wait. Tell me first what chance there is for an international polo match. Polo, sententiously began the second secretary, who himself was a crackerjack at the game, is a proposition of ponies. Men can be trained for polo, but polo ponies must be born. Without good ponies... James, the page who guarded the outer walls of the Chancellery, appeared in the doorway. "Please, sir, a person," he announced, "with a note for the ambassador. He says it's important." "Tell him to leave it," said the secretary. "Polo ponies." "Yes, sir," interrupted the page, "but he won't leave it, not unless he keeps the half-crown." "For heaven's sake," protested the second secretary, "then let him keep the half-crown. When I say polo ponies, I don't mean..." James, although alarmed at his own temerity, refused to accept the dismissal. "But please, sir," he begged, "I think the half-crown is for the ambassador." The astonished diplomat gazed with open eyes. "You think what?" he exclaimed. James, upon the defensive, explained breathlessly. "Because, sir," he stammered, "it was inside the note when it was thrown out of the window." Ford had been sprawling in a soft leather chair in front of the open fire. With the privilege of an old schoolfellow and college classmate, he had been jabbing the soft coal with his walking stick, causing it to burst into tiny flames. His cigarette drooped from his lips, his hat was cocked over one eye, he was a picture of indifference, merging upon boredom. But at the words of the boy, his attitude both of mind and body underwent an instant change. It was as though he were an actor, and the words, "thrown from the window," were his cue. It was as though he were a dozing fox-terrier, and the voice of his master had whispered in his ear, "Sikkim." For a moment, with benign reproach, the second secretary regarded the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?